listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 164 of Rogue Startups. Craig, how are you today?
Yeah, we're good, man. Back at home after being gone for almost 2 weeks on vacation. So Barcelona and Marrakesh before that. And yeah, it's really great to be home. I've been super productive here this first week back home. And it's just a really good feeling. So nice to be back home where I have all of my stuff and getting a lot of stuff done. We've rolled some really cool things out across the businesses here in the last week or so. So it feels good to be getting kind of back into the flow of things. How about you?
Good to hear. Things are a bit of a complicated mess on my side, but mostly because of my freelance client. We're getting closer to a release that I'm now getting the distinct impression is not going to happen.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and they don't like to hear that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's part of the software development game. Anyway, yes, so I've been putting in some longer hours and some weekend stuff. And my wife and family have been very understanding, but I think their understanding is starting to get pushed to the edge of not understanding. So yeah, it's gotta end here sometime soon. On the plus side, things are good with Recapture. We have completed a number of integrations, and now we're at points where we're like waiting for stuff from other people. So. Yeah, that's a good and a bad place to be both.
Yeah.
I never like waiting for stuff that I don't have control over, but that's the way it is.
So with these integrations, you guys pushed code out on your end and waiting for them to accept it, or how does that work?
In some cases, yes. So we're integrating with Cardhook and Recharge and Cratejoy and Woo and EDD. So a couple of those are pretty straightforward, like Woo and EDD. Those are not that hard. The hardest part is submitting the plugins to the WordPress repository and getting them reviewed.
Gotcha.
So, and I've been through that process before. I just polished up the README today or yesterday and dealing with final preparations of packages and all that sort of nonsense. For the others, those are the ones that they have like a full-fledged app store and you kind of have to get some buy-in from them to be put on that app store.
Yep.
And that's the part we're kind of waiting on. One of them I talked to and they were like, yeah, well, we kind of have a little bit of a backlog right now. I'm like, wait a minute. You didn't tell me that in December. And I said, you know, if we got on this, can we get in right away? And they're like, oh yeah, sure. And now I'm pushing a little bit harder and they're like, yeah, Q2, maybe Q3. I'm like, oh
wow. to get a release.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm waiting to find out what's going on there. I haven't talked to, you know, this is like support and people that are supposedly in charge of the integration things there. But
yeah,
things like that can change if you move up the command hierarchy a bit. So
you become the squeaky wheel.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure that out in a non-dickish kind of way.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, kind of working through that at the moment.
Gotcha. We pushed two things out for Castos this week. One is really cool, is we released like a feedback hub. So we are, we're using feature upvote for, which is like a SaaS app that collects user feedback and lets them kind of upvote features, based on kind of what they feel is important. And so we released that early this week and then emailed our list. And we've gotten some really interesting feedback already from users upvoting things that I thought people would want to put on there, but also to a lot of people bringing new ideas that we hadn't really thought about or didn't think were that important. So it's been cool to get like direct feedback from our users about stuff they want to see, both for the plugin and for Castos hosting. So it's cool. I think it's already kind of informing how we're going to prioritize development going forward, because it's always like I have this stuff in my head that I think is important and that should be done and is like, you know, the best for everybody, but then our users come back and say something different, and I think that's just kind of natural. Like as I spend more time in the app and stuff like that, I probably get a little further away from what you know, a new user wants or something. So it's cool to have a mechanism now to where this is going to be like in our onboarding emails and stuff like that, to where like, hey, if you have a suggestion for something you want, you know, go to feedback.castos.com and drop a message in there, upvote something that's already there. And you can organize it by tags and stuff like that. So that's been really cool. I met the founder of Feature Upvote when I was in Barcelona last week. So it's cool to be able to kind of put all that together at once.
Very nice. Very nice. Yes. I've, you know, talked to Steve on and off in forums over the years, and I've heard him talk about his product before. So I'm glad that worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just a really, it's nice and simple, but it's, I feel like it's a really nice thing to be able to provide for our users and customers, because it gives them a voice and it gives us data, you know, Dave, you're all about data, right? So like it gives us data around like, it's not just this thing in my head. It's like legit. Everyone is asking for this thing. And we can go back to the customers when they say, why didn't you build this thing? And you say, well, because, you know, 37 other people wanted this other thing instead. And so we have to listen to the squeakiest wheel, right?
Yeah. Now, did you somehow segment that so you prioritized or have a way of distinguishing the paid versus unpaid votes on that board? Because yeah. I would think that that would be very important.
Yeah. So in a couple of ways, I mean, some features are just for Castos, right? So obviously everyone there is paid. And then within the plugin, we collect, Steve is very smart, the founder of Feature Upvote, requires a name and an email address for everyone who comes in to upvote or submit a suggestion. So we can go back and kind of line up those with like who's an actual customer. It would be a little manual, but we'll be able to say like, yep, they're customers, they're customers, they're customers, they're not, they're not, they're not. Instead of just like a random unregistered upvoting thing to where people could kind of spam it and stuff. Yeah.
Good, good. Yeah. Cause I mean, if you had a bunch of just randos from the internet going in and randomly upvoting things or putting on, you know, hey, check out our Viagra site over here.
Right.
Then
right.
That's just going to be an absolute disaster. So I'm glad that's
it. Yeah. Yeah. So it's all, you know, I think it's all pretty well expected at this point, but the priority that people are giving certain things is the surprise. I mean, everything that we see is things that I kind of nod my head and say, yep, makes sense, makes sense, makes sense. It's just the importance that people are putting on some things is kind of surprising. So that's cool. It's cool to see. And yeah, I mean, it's cool to just get more data around how we structure the product pipeline and our development cycles. Cause that's, I mean, at this point, that's one of the hardest things. It's like, what do we spend our resources on? Cause you know, everyone has finite resources. So what's the smartest place to put the time and energy for us all. So that's been really cool.
Excellent. Excellent.
And the other thing, I guess, on the Castos end is we have swag now, Dave. So I'll send you a Castos t-shirt. We have
Sweet.
Our own little Shopify store and our own little swag set up. Yeah, it's really cool. So we're using Printful, I think it is. So we got everything hooked up through Shopify, automated fulfillment. It's really cool. So you can go shop.castos.com and order a hat or a hoodie or a mug or a t-shirt or something like that. It all just gets printed on demand and shipped to you in a couple of days. So anybody wants their Castos t-shirt, go to shop.castos.com.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm a spelt XL, by the way.
I tell you, man, I mean, like, you know, I spend all day online and like in this world, it is amazing how easy all that stuff is. I mean, it took me to set up Printful and Shopify and all that. It took me an hour and a half to do all of it, you know?
No code for the win.
Yeah. I mean, it's just great. It's like install the Printful app in Shopify and then, you know, click, yes, I want to connect to my bank account for Shopify payment. Like they just white label Stripe, I think. It's so easy and whatever. So we'll get a couple of orders a month, make like $2 a t-shirt or something like that. But it's just people being able to come and get the swag and, you know, be walking billboards for us. So it's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what are we talking about today?
Well, so I had this sort of subject that was kind of bothering me, And I think it, the reason it was bothering me is that I signed up for a variety of services recently for just, you know, various things I was trying out. And I noticed that I basically was signing up for these services. They were dutifully sending me all of their onboarding emails. And I was ignoring every goddamn one of them.
Mm.
I didn't really look through them. And I'm still on people's like end of trial sequences. And they're still sending me follow-ups and blog articles and yada, yada, yada. And I'm still kind of ignoring it. But for whatever reason, I'm not unsubscribing from it. And I'm sitting here wondering to myself, oh my God, are people doing that with my emails too? And so I kind of had this panic moment. And I'm like, are we getting onboarding email fatigue? Do we just take this stuff for granted now? Do we no longer care about it? Does it not move the needle anymore? Do people just stop opening them? Are they being helped by them in any way?
Is email the best medium to onboard somebody?
Oh, no. We're not going there. I love email. I heart email. No, but I mean, do they prefer other ways? Would they rather have chat, or do they want to be like led through the application in one of those online tours or whatever?
Yeah.
Which, for the record, I fucking hate every single one of those I ever come across. It literally doesn't matter what they're trying to tell me. I'm looking for that Closex as fast as possible. I'm like, just shut it down. I'm like, got it, done. Go away. I've had enough. Let me wander through the app at my own pace. Like, that's what I want. But they kind of force you into that until you get to a certain sequence and you're like, oh, thank God. Okay, I'm done. Now I can look around.
Yeah. But, you know, I think the thing with those specifically, and that's not really what we're talking about, but the thing with those and onboarding in general is it should be additive and supportive, but not get in your way. You know, and I think that's where a lot of those structured onboarding, click this thing and then click this thing and then click this thing and a bunch of like dummy data. I think that's where it falls down is like, if I go in and sign up for an app and I'm ready to start using it and you show me all this other crap that doesn't help me achieve my goal, then you're not helping me get onboarded, you know?
Yeah. And so that just made me question in general, like, what are onboarding emails still effective? That was question number one. And if they're not effective, what's the better way to do it? And what should that mean for everything that I'm doing now? And of course, I went to go dig up data on all of this stuff. And I tried to compare, like, and this is a really big pain in the ass and drip, unfortunately. I wanted to be able to say, you know, just like I could in Google Analytics, take this period of 30 days compared to the same 30 days from last year, show me what's increased or decreased. Like, that's what I really wanted to know. And then I could like do that per campaign. And well, you could see that this broke down real fast because they don't have that comparison thing. So I tried this on a couple of key campaigns. I would have loved to see it on every one of my campaigns. So if anybody from Drip is listening to this here, you guys need to up your analytics game so that I can see, is my onboarding sequence actually doing better or worse over time so that I can decide, do I need to update this or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not likely that anybody's going to hear that. But anyway, that's my wish from today. And I came across some surprising data.
Do tell.
I'm just leaving it hang out there as a big pregnant pause. So my theory was, people are getting tired of this. Like, they're not going to be opening them as much. They're not going to respond as much. Their click rates are lower. Their response rates are lower. The unsubscribe rates are higher. That was my theory. Guess what my data told me from the WordPress plugins?
It's better than email is better than ever.
Not only is email better than ever, but I was wrong on every single count.
Interesting. Tell me.
Open rates are higher.
What do you mean open rates are higher?
Like, so I took, so here's my methodology. And some of this could have to do with the fact that I just purged 25% of my subscribers off of the lists.
Might have something to do with
about
it.
About a month ago. But in the last month, so compared a 30-day period, basically from February 5th to today, March 7th. And in that time, it gave me my open rate, my click rate, and my unsubscribe rate. So then I took that exact same email and I went back 1 year in time. And I looked at the open rate, the click rate, and the unsubscribe rate. And in both of my plugins for the same welcome email in my campaign, which had the highest rate, I'm seeing consistently that in both cases it was higher. So the open rates were higher, the unsubscribe rates were lower, the click rates were higher.
Okay.
I mean, I would have to be more diligent and do a specific test before the unsubscribes happen, so somewhere in January. So what I really would want to compare is like maybe December to December, even though that's kind of a shitty month. So maybe more like October to October, and then compare it. But I would still be willing to bet that I see a general improvement. And that surprised me. I really did not expect to see that on both plugins. It was the same on both plugins. Like, and the rates down the line were pretty consistent. So they both have 5 email sequences. The first rate, the open rate is like close to 50%. It's like 47 or 46 or 48, something like that. And then the next one drops down significantly to like 37, 35, somewhere in there. And then the remaining 3 either like peter out at around 31, 30, 29, somewhere in there, or they stay in the low 30s all the way to the end.
Yeah, and that's tough to tell like what of that is old data and what of it is new data, right? Because you can't tell that like what.
Yeah, I mean, I have zero visibility into what Drip does in the back end for how are they aggregating this data? Did they do it right?
But also, like, are those numbers changing in the last 3 months or versus a year ago or whatever, right?
Yeah, and, you know, here's another question. You know, when I purged all those subscribers, did that re-aggregate the numbers? In other words, am I looking at apples and apples? Yeah. Or is it apples and oranges? I really don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know how anybody would ever know. I mean, I'm sure if I asked a question of Drip support, they'll probably be like, oh, yeah, the numbers are accurate. Well, here's a specific statistical question. Can you answer this? No.
Right. No, that's real. As someone who deals in analytics every day with Castos, it is really, really, really hard to provide good, predictable analytics. I mean, it's just hard. So I feel for those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, interestingly, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, well, what on earth, you know, is keeping that alive? I mean, it's not like, I mean, this, I have to say, this content is really, really old. I have seriously not touched it since 2014. Maybe AWPCP, I pushed it up in 2015. So, you know, ooh, it's slightly newer, but it's, I took the same content on both and I just, well, actually, it's not the same. I had different people write it, but it was the same sort of format of template, like, you know, let's talk about directories. Let's talk about classifieds. You know, what are the problems out there? What are the things you have to struggle with? How does AWPCP or business directory solve those things? So you drip that out over 5. And at the very last one, you know, of course, it's pitching the combo pack or the pro pack as hard as I can. And, you know, and the pitch gets, you know, louder over time, but it starts with a soft one and mentions and, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But then I have like a follow-up email that still consistently to this day has the highest open rates that I've ever seen on any email that isn't like, well, Big Snow Tiny Conf, I get close to like 100% open rate on that. But, you know, I'm sending it to 12 people. So,
right.
And they're all like really, I mean, they just plunked down hard-earned cash to come to a thing. You bet your ass they're opening the email to find out how to do it, right?
Yeah.
So that doesn't really count. But yeah, the other emails that I'm looking at for the follow-up, I mean, these are definitely getting some insanely high follow-up rates. The other thing that I discovered today, which I'm unbelievably embarrassed about, but I'm going to admit this on air. So I went to my recapture onboarding and I'm looking through this and I'm looking at my workflow. And I realized today that when I added Shopify to the mix, I never went back and updated the workflow so that those subscribers that were tagged Shopify got a slightly different onboarding message. In fact, right now, they are completely excluded from onboarding until they activate a campaign, which if they don't know to activate a campaign, they will never receive that email.
Yeah.
So I have been shooting myself in the foot over and over and over for 7-8 freaking months.
Yeah, this is funny. And this is a timely episode. So we are switching our onboarding emails for Sales Camp to user list. So mm-hmm. Benedict and Jane Portman. And a big reason that we're doing this, and we talked about this on a call recently, is it's so tough to know when emails are going out when you're using automation. You know, is it like if 3 days pass and they do this thing, then send us email. But that those things may never happen, you know, like, and that's probably what you're running into, is like you had your workflow set up for a set of conditions to happen. And like, it's just the wrong time in the customer cycle or whatever for that to happen. But that's like the trouble with onboarding emails. If you get too fancy, I think, with it, then like it never sends the message at the right time, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I had this on my list of things that I really wanted to revisit, was to go back and check my Shopify onboarding sequence, because, you know, I've got a lot of FAQs that are now Shopify specific. I went and wrote FAQs about certain things. And in fact, we even just added a feature this week about being able to reprocess carts that Shopify has tracked before we've even installed, which I don't think any other abandoned cart thing does. Mm-hmm. Not to my knowledge. I went and I did a check of a few of the big ones, and I don't see this listed in their features. So, I mean, maybe they do and they just don't talk about it. And I'm certainly not going to be able to install every single one of them and find that out. I just don't have the bandwidth for that. But I mean, everybody's been asking about it. Like, do you do this? Do you do this? Do you do this? And so I wrote up a thing about it. And now that I've written it up and we've changed this feature, I have to go change it again. But I was sitting there thinking to myself, God, that first email that goes to the Shopify folks on install, I need to send this to them. I need to update that. I need to go and make sure that they see that and hear it, because they're clearly not, because I'm just getting contacted over and over again. Yep. And now that I'm going back and looking at this, I'm like, oh shit, they didn't even get an onboarding email. God, what a dumbass application. Yeah. So, and you know, I'm not getting very many Magento installs, but they were still receiving all their emails. So yeah, they kind of get this out of the blue, hey, you activated your campaign, great. And then another one they get when they've recovered revenue. But with a lot of Shopify stores, they don't even get that far, because they might not have activated their campaign.
Yeah.
So yeah, very much a catch 22. And I think this very much explains why I've seen stores that just never turn it on. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong?
Yeah.
Now I know what the fuck is wrong. It's my fault.
Well, and to that point, I mean, I think talking about like, is email the best medium? Like, you can't really do it in Shopify, because you can't like pop a heads up message in Shopify for them or something. But like in app and in, well, you probably could like put a prompt in the Shopify app. So when they're in Shopify and they load your app, it has a prompt to say, hey, you know, the first step is to do this thing, and a big old, you know, button pointing down there. And here's the help doc to help you kind of do this kind of stuff. That's, for us, that's the direction we're going in. Actually tweeted about this yesterday before we even came up with this topic for the podcast, Dave. It's like, we have customers with Castos who like totally hit the ground running and never send us a support inquiry. And we have other customers who send 10 a day. And part of me is like, how can you send 10 emails a day about something like this? But then part of me is like, where are we falling down with product and with in-app messaging and with the emails we send and with our help documentation and like all of this stuff, to where we can have both sides of that spectrum? Why can we have some people that are totally successful and never have to send us a message, and then some people who just literally beat their head against the wall for 2 weeks and then tell us that we're, you know, giant steaming piles of shit with the same product? You know, like, I don't know the answer to that, but I think a lot of it comes down, like, minimizing that comes down a lot to like putting the information right in front of them so they don't have to do anything, and they like have to go out of their way to miss the information, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have that same, I don't know what you call that, the laundry list, the checklist, the breadcrumb, I don't know, the whatever it is, you lead them through and say, hey, you've got 6 steps to go. you're on step three right now, that kind of a thing. We have that. We have sort of a list like that. I'm thinking maybe it could be improved because that's literally the only thing that they're going to see if they're on Shopify. So there is a way. The thing that I don't like about it now is that if you go to certain places, you can end up navigating away and you can't get back there again. So that's one thing I've asked my developer to go fix. Like if they haven't completed all the steps, I want them to specifically stay, I'm done, leave me alone, or I want to get back to the steps because I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
And we don't have that now. So we didn't do a good job with that. But the other thing that you just mentioned was there was something that I was reading recently and I really wish I had saved the link because now I can't remember where it was. But the gist of the article that I was reading went something like this. There is an optimum level of engagement that if your user is showing you that optimum level of engagement, they're more likely to convert to a paid user, which I thought was fascinating. And this was somebody who was studying this over their own app. And again, I don't know if this was on Twitter. I think it was on Twitter. So God only knows where it came from. But somebody was studying basically who are the people that converted to paid and how many times did they contact support before they converted to paid. And so they took the averages in there. And they found that those that never converted to paid fell into one of two buckets. They either didn't contact them at all, or they were like barraging them with message after message after message. And then finally they're just like, fuck it, I'm not going to sign up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The number, now I do remember this, the number that they said, the optimal number of interactions with a paid subscriber was 4. When they had 4 interactions with somebody who had specific questions during setup, didn't matter what they were, 4 interactions equaled the highest percentage to convert to paid.
Wow, really?
4. And now I wish I knew where this was because we're quoting this on the show and I don't have a source and that sucks.
Yeah. No, it's just
I apologize, insane. Everybody. Next time I'll try to keep all my sources in Twitter. But the reality is I will read so much stuff on Twitter that I'm like, ugh.
You know, so a lot because of it, for me as a user, I'll give you a few examples of onboarding that I think does really, really well that I've been through in the last 6 months or so. Maybe it's more than 6 months. Intercom is exceptional, I think. They just have a ton of documentation about everything, but they also have the little guide thing. Like they put a little sidebar up to say like you're 6 out of 9 steps to getting set up. I think that's really helpful because at least you know. Pipedrive, I just got a Pipedrive account today actually. And they do the similar kind of thing. Like here's the checkbox. And Asana, and that there's a little different, but they have video tutorials on every page you go to. So like the first time you go to a page, it says, hey, these are projects. This is what you do with projects. And here, and it's like a minute long. And then you say, yep, I got it. Create my first project. And then that video, you never see it again. But like it solves the, what the fuck am I supposed to do here question in every page, you know?
Oh, yes. I've wanted to do something like that for so long, but you know, that's all on me, right? Like nobody else is going to do that content for me because they don't know the interface. Like I know the interface and I would have to explain to somebody else what they're supposed to do. So, I mean, that's been high on my list just to come up with a series of screencasts for like the most common things. Like here's how to build a campaign. Here's how to set up your email collectors. Here's how to do segmentation. Here's how to run the reports, like just simple, straightforward things that I know people need to do all the time. I haven't even gotten that far. It's been, you know, kind of embarrassing. So,
yeah. So we have, so Jane Portman designed like the Castos dashboard for us and she very smartly put like a prompt for those pop-up videos in the like blank episodes page in the app. So you log in, you don't have any episodes yet. And it has like a, whatever, you know, click here for information about how to add your first episode and it pops up a light box with the video and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think for me, you're talking about like, are onboarding emails dead or not? And like, maybe you need a couple touches with people. But for me, like the key is providing all of the stuff right in the app. And it's not even in-app messaging. It's like in the app to let people be successful, you know?
I think you need both. And here's why I think you need both. We're distractible, right? I'm speaking directly to my experience. I am distractible as hell. I could be in the middle of something and then, bloop, you know, get a thing in Slack or bing, an email arrives or phone call on my thing. And whatever was up there, I'm now off task. I'm on something else. And I hate being interrupt driven like that, but it's kind of the nature of my freelance client. So I have to sort of grin and bear it. But as a result of that, I like having something I can like come back and anchor myself to. So if I'm like, oh shit, well, where was I? Well, maybe I closed out the browser tab I was looking at. But if I have an email that says, hey, here's how to get started, or here's the link to the dashboard, or here's the first thing that you should really look about how to do XYZ, that kind of stuff brings me back on task quick. So when I said that I'm annoyed by all of those emails, that's true. I am annoyed by most of those emails and I ignore the vast majority of them. But when I do get distracted, that's what I come back to. So yeah. I don't use them in the way that they expect me to use them. I use them in the way I want to use them, which is a jump off point into the application. Because sometimes I'll go dive directly into the dashboard of the thing that I just signed up for. And I'll be like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do now? Because I've clicked away all of the tour and I'm, you know, I've received all the emails and now I'm ready to focus on it, but now I'm lost.
Yeah.
So then I sometimes
like
go back.
That should never happen, right? Like you should never get in an app and be lost.
You shouldn't. No. I mean, that speaks to the part that you just talked about where if there was context in-app help ready for me there. Like we try to put a lot of tool tips in Recapture. Unfortunately, I have no statistics as to whether they're actually useful or not.
Yeah. But
generally speaking, I don't get a lot of how do I use the screen kind of questions. It's like, how do I set up campaign X? Like they want to know where do I manage my abandoned carts or where do I, you talk about this live cart feed, where is it?
Yeah.
Even though there's a menu item that says live cart feed. Yeah, but I mean, they're very specific questions like that. Sometimes it's about like accessing reports and analytics. Now those are not, there's multiple reports and multiple kinds of ways to get at that data. There's like one that's emailed to you. There's a summary one, there's one per campaign. And there's drill downs from there. So, I mean, we have lots of reports, but exposing that in a meaningful way is like really overwhelming. So a lot of the times people will be like, I want to see this report with these dimensions at this for this level of data. And then I can go boom right here. You know, I can pull that out, but writing that up as documentation is really challenging. I've tried.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, documentation and even the emails are if the app doesn't do its job, you know, like if the app isn't intuitive, doesn't have the prompts and the flow that's normal for somebody to do their thing, then you have documentation. And then if they need to get in touch with you with support, then that kind of falls back. And Dave, talking about, you know, how you use like the in-app or on-screen prompts versus email, maybe the email should be looked at as like a fallback. You know, if the user gets interrupted as they're going through setup and they close the tab and then come back and all your prompts and stuff are gone, then they have the email to refer back to. But it maybe shouldn't be like the first line of whatever offense or defense of getting somebody onboarded. Because for me, like for you to leave my web app to go open your email with all the other stuff in your email is like a lost opportunity. You're in the app. Let's get you doing the thing you want to do. And you can go to email another time. Or if you have to refer to something later, it's like in perpetuity in your email. But you shouldn't have to leave the app to do anything. You know, I feel pretty strongly about that.
Yeah, I'm going to call that hashtag epic fail if you have to do that.
Yeah.
But
it is great to have all that stuff there where people can reference it in their own world, like an email, not in the, you know, support doc somewhere, but in email. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you really need to meet them where they're at, not where you're at. And you got to just decide that there's multiple different ways that they can come at this. And you kind of have to account for them all. So that's, you know, in our case, that's live chat. That's a phone number, which, by the way, I get maybe 2 phone calls in a calendar year.
Yeah, that's great.
it's hilarious. It's on my pricing page. Never gets called. I don't even know how much I spend on it every month. I think it's like $17 a month from Grasshopper. So yeah, I mean, that's, it is what it is. It's there for confidence. It, it does get an occasional call, so I can't totally discount it, but at the same time, you know, it's not driving, you know, tons of, interaction with customers. The live chat is very popular. The email is somewhat popular, depends on where they're at and in kind of the stage. Most of it's chat.
Yeah.
That's the one that I think that everybody uses the most, because it's right there on the site and it's right there in the app. So when somebody gets stuck, they can at least contact me right away.
Right. Right.
So there's that. Yeah. But you know, I think we could do better with, like, so there's one place in the app where we're constantly getting questions about custom emails. And so I just asked Mike to throw in a link that says, here's how to create custom emails. Just links straight to our docs. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm thinking, well, shit, we should probably have that like all over the place. But now I'm not sure if I have all the docs to support all over the place. So I got to review that. But that's more work for me, right?
The nice thing about those, and we do some similar stuff, and the nice thing about linking out to an external resource, whether it's like a video or a doc or something like that, is if things change, you can update the information in that like external resource without having to update the app. Like, you know, Wistia, you can like replace a video at a certain URL. And if that's embedded in your app, you don't have to go like deploy an update to the app to update the URL for that video. You can just replace the video file that it's pointing to. Or like the help doc, it's always linking to the same help doc link. You just edit the, you know, edit the document, help scout or whatever. So for me, as somebody who tinkers around a lot with that kind of stuff, it's really helpful to link to that fixed kind of static stuff, that doesn't rely on like, you know, the developers to deploy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's super important.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. But yeah, man, I mean, I think it's really important, because it's not just, it's a little bit of like trial to paid conversion optimization, but it's a little bit of, I don't know, what's the term, like your reputation and like the social proof people pass on about your app. Like, it's a really, you know, kind of social world in SaaS these days, right? And if someone comes in and just is like dumbfounded when they log into your application, they're going to walk around and tell all their friends, like, I signed into Castos and I had no effing idea what I was doing. It is a pile of junk. Or they can log in and see all this pretty, you know, prompts and natural workflow and stuff and say, you know, I logged in, it was great, it was so easy to get started, all this kind of stuff. And like, I don't know about you, Dave, but we see a ton of people say, you know, they come to us and say, hey, I heard about you from my friend, he just got started, they're really loving it, so I thought I'd give it a try. And I think like that first impression that like design and onboarding and in-app messaging and stuff makes with people is really profound in that way.
Yeah. Word of mouth is very strong. And of course there's a statistic that sticks in my head, I think, from customer support stuff that I was looking up back in the day when I worked on Support Vine. But basically it comes down to the fact that somebody is like three times more likely, I think. Is it three times or six times? Anyway, it's a number. Three or six. Either of those is bad. It's three times more likely that when somebody has a negative experience, they're going to talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I think it might have been six, because I think it's really huge, because they showed like a bunch of smiley faces, and you know, it looked like the vast majority of what's sitting there is frowny faces. So, I mean, in essence, basically when somebody has a negative experience, they're more likely to say something shitty about your app or just walk away without saying anything at all. And you don't get any growth out of that. So, you know, having these prompts, having some documentation, in-app chat, whatever, is going to make that less likely. So,
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And actually sending the onboarding email in the first place apparently also helps, which I will now be going to fix. So that's my takeaway from this week. How about you out there? What did you learn this week that was surprising? Or what do you have to say about email as an onboarding tool? Is it still effective for you? Are you seeing something that we're not? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. And again, our one ask, if you're loving the show and you feel like it's super valuable, we'd love it if you'd shared it with somebody that you think would really benefit from it too. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.